breath ragged and steaming through his open jaws. He says, "This could be it. Just you and me, and then nothing. Nothing." It's as if he cannot fasten on her eyes. He looks past her, and then at her mouth, and he does not meet her stare. He runs his tongue across his lips, some unconscious gesture of pain or relish. And then he flashes her a grimace, showing her all of his teeth, his lips pulled back. He raises her chin with the gun, and she allows it to be raised, her eyes moving to follow him as he angles her face upward. He says, "I need you. I need you so badly. And this could be our world, Kibble. Fuck the rest of it. That would be it. I would do you, and then I'd do myself. Burn the fucking house down. Burn it all fucking down and be done with it. God damn, I am so tired, Kibble. I want to end it like this, Kibble. You and me. A perfect ending. Have you down to your bones once and for all. You know, right now, that there's no going back. We're too far into this thing, and I've gotten nowhere. I spent 3 months away from you, and I knew, every day, I knew that I was doing the wrong thing. There's no running away from this, and there's no going on with it. So we end it together, right here, right now." He moves the gun from her chin to her forehead. He looks fixedly down into some point between her eyes, and she gazes back at him, trembling now, quivers that come in tight succession and then recede, and the grass stirs all around them like an ocean. "You want to kill me," she says, just to say it. At this, he shudders. He steps away from her and he puts his hands to his temples, one of them holding the gun. Then he stoops in the grass as if he might throw up. "Fuck," he says, shaking his head. "Fuck," he says. "Fuck." He puts the gun under his own chin, looks up at the dark sky with the silver-lit undersides of clouds. Then, because he forgets that there is a round in the chamber, or because he wants the drama, he racks the slide noisily, and Turtle hears the round jam. He makes an aggrieved noise, looks at the gun, inspecting it in the dark. "Fuck," he says in disbelief, banging on the gun's frame with the heel of his hand. "You needed to clean it, that's all." He shakes his head.
"Don't talk to me like that," he says. "Don't you be a little bitch. Not right now. Not now."
Turtle says nothing.
"Fuck,"
Martin says. He looks in through the ejection port. Turtle can tell, just from the sound, that the gun has fed another round into the chamber without extracting the first. She knows that she can fix the jam, but she makes no move to help. Martin probes the round half-lodged in the chamber, trying to rack the fixed slide, grimacing.
"It's fucking jammed," he says as if he can't believe it.
Turtle is embarrassed for him. Martin bangs the gun with the heel of his hand, trying to make something give.
"Okay," he says, looking around. "Fuck. Okay."
He looks up, nodding now, reappraising, biting his lower lip, breathing hard in frustration.
"We go on like we always have."
Turtle spits into the grass and walks away through the field up toward the house sitting lonely and dark at the top of its black hill. 21. Turtle lies that night on her floor, belly down, chin on her hands, looking into the flame of her oil lamp, spooning one foot against the other, thinking. He came back and everything left you. All the dreams about the girl you could be, gone. You always thought it was him, but you wanted him back. You're in this too. You were a child once, but not anymore. And what could be excused in a child will not be, and cannot be excused in you. You should have, she thinks, used a fucking condom. She doesn't know exactly how it works, but things have changed. She thinks, maybe it was you all along. Maybe there is something in you, something rotten. You asked for it, or you wanted it. Of course you did. You brought him into this when you were just a child, and your mother understood, and when she understood, she killed herself. And now he cannot get away. He looks into your eyes, and he wants to die. Turtle could smash to pieces. It is bad thinking, sloppy thinking. When you look at the thing like it is, she thinks, you see that Martin spent his life reaching out toward Grandpa, groping for some sign, and Grandpa just fucking hated him. Your father was raised in total, annihilating, self-hating destitution, and that is how he lives. But he loved you, loved the hell out of you. How he found that in him, you might never know. All the strength in you, that came from him. The spark in you, whatever faith you have in yourself, everything in you that resists the rot, all of that came from him. He never had it for himself, but he found it for you. And you have to think he had some idea what he might be preparing you for, and what he might have to give up. She is shaking. And you might, she thinks, you might be okay. And if that happens, she thinks, it'll be because he gave you everything. That is the best of him. In the morning, she comes down the creaking stairs and finds Cayenne still asleep in front of the fire, curled on her side, hunched a little, knees drawn up, heels pulled almost to her butt, her hands folded around one another and clutched to her chest. Turtle walks quietly into the kitchen. She doesn't want to wake the girl, and so takes down her copper pot from its meat hook as silently as she can, and instead of running the tap, takes up the water glasses left on the counter and pours them down the side of the pot. She strikes the match on her thumbnail, lights the stove. She hitches herself up onto the counter, sits there cross-legged to wait. She's looking at the girl. She thinks, God damn. The worst interpretation is that Martin picked the girl because it is about children. But Turtle doesn't think so. When the water begins to boil, Cayenne stirs and wakes, pushes herself against the wall. She sits hunched, holding her finger in her other hand. She watches Turtle silently. After a moment, she picks up her book, opens it, sits bent over it. Turtle hates her little cunt face. Turtle says, "What you reading?" The girl looks up at her, blank, sullen. "What are you reading?" Turtle says. "Twilight?" "I see that." "Oh," the girl stares. "I mean, what's it about?" She riffles through the pages to her own, marked page, as if trying to remember. "Just," she says. Turtle ladles up tea from the pot into her cast-iron teacup. "You know," Cayenne says, "I didn't need my mother. Not really. I was just so pissed off. I just said that because I was so pissed off." Turtle thinks, "I was just so pissed off." The girl is copying someone. Some man in her life. Her mother's boyfriend. Somebody who said that. "I didn't mean it. I was just so pissed off. Turtle says, yeah. Martin comes out of his bedroom into the kitchen and stands at the counter beside her. He looks down into the copper pot of nettle leaves and then picks up a kettle and fills it with water. He begins looking around in the cabinets for coffee, but there is no coffee. And finally, he goes to the grocery bags he left on the floor and takes out a blue tub of Maxwell House and decants it into the French press. Turtle waits for someone to speak, but no one does. His kettle boils, and he pours it into the French press and waits, staring fixedly down into the thick, black, crackling crust of grounds at the top of the beaker. Cayenne turns the pages of her book. Turtle looks back at the girl and wants to say something, but there doesn't seem to be anything she can say. Martin places both hands down on the counter and leans forward onto it.
I've been thinking about it, he says. And I think we've got to open her back up.
What? Turtle says. Martin goes into the living room and kneels down beside Cayenne, holds out his hands. She gives him her hurt one. He turns it over.
I got a good look at it when I bandaged it, and the bone inside was crushed to shards, and the meat around it was badly bruised, and maybe even burned. And I don't think the skin can close over the wound. I think we've got to cut that finger open and clip the bone down to the first knuckle, and then sew it back closed so that the skin can heal across the tip.
No, Cayenne says. She takes her hand and holds it to her chest. No, you can't. Martin doesn't appear to hear her.
All right, Turtle says.
Cayenne pushes herself back with her heels, scooting across the floorboards until she's against the wall. She holds the wounded hand to her chest. She says,
no, 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 no.
Watch her, he says to Turtle, and rises and walks away. The girl is shaking all over. She says,
you're not going to let him, are you?
Turtle looks away, embarrassed for the girl. Then, rather than stay in the living room with her, Turtle follows Martin down the hallway to the pantry. He says,
they have some kind of surgical tool for trimming bone. I just don't know what it is, and I don't have one. You know, I always meant to get more medical implements, but there just is never enough goddamn time or enough money, Kibble. Now look at this. I'm looking at wire cutters and diagonal pliers and things.
Is this necessary?
Yes, it's necessary. I was thinking on it last night. Unless we can stitch the flaps of skin together over the end of her finger, it won't heal. There's a diagram in one of the books I had downstairs. It's called a fish mouth amputation because you trim the end of the finger like a fish mouth. You have to trim all the interior tissue, apparently, or the amputation bulges or mushrooms at the tip. All we've got to do is make two deep cuts on either side of the finger and peel them open and dig the bone out. Pare out the extra tissue and stitch it closed. I have a suture set, so we can do that just fine.
Turtle says, is it really going to be that easy? He looks at her.
Why wouldn't it?
What if there's something we don't know about the anatomy? Or just something we're not thinking of?
Look, Kibble, it's a finger. It's not trivial, but it's not rocket science either.
Martin picks up a flashlight and throws open the hatch to the basement, and she follows him down the spiral staircase and among the tarped-up pallets of 5-gallon buckets. He opens the aluminum cabinets and stands, casting the flashlight beam across the ranks of glass blister caps and prescription bottles, and takes down a glass 10-milliliter single-dose bottle of 0.25% lidocaine HCI, turns it over, stands looking at the expiration date.
Expired, he says, shaking the bottle. But we'll see. Plain. No epinephrine, which is good. This will work.
What about something more general?
Knock her out, you mean?
Yeah, Turtle says.
She doesn't need that. I don't have anything like that, and she doesn't need it. We could get some veterinary ketamine, maybe, but it would take time, and with a kid that size, more dangerous anyway.
Will this really work?
Yes, he says.
You're sure?
Yes, he says.
They climb up together. He goes into the bathroom and comes out with the bucket of first aid supplies. The scalpel and the sutures are in sterile packaging, but the diagonal pliers, the hemostatic forceps, the tweezers, and the surgical scissors are all loose, and he drops them into the boiling tea. He opens the freezer for ice, but there is no power, and the freezer does not run, and he takes out the ice cube tray with its rows of water and throws it into the sink, and he looks at Turtle morosely. Cayenne watches without speaking, holding her hand to her chest.
I don't want to, she says.
Martin turns to a cooler on the floor, now full of stagnant water, and takes out a beer with the label soaked off, bangs it open on the countertop. He leans back against the counter and looks at the child, holding the dripping beer loosely slung between thumb and forefinger, taking drinks. The boiling implements rattle against the bottom of the pot.
I don't want to, Cayenne says again. I don't want to.
He empties the pot of tea into a colander. The implements are steaming. He carries the colander over to Cayenne.
Is the colander clean? Turtle asks. Sure, it's clean.
Have you ever injected lidocaine?
Hell no, he says.
And is 10 milliliters enough?
It's a whole bottle. I'm sure it's enough.
We don't know what it does after its expiration.
Kibble, you're making her more nervous than she needs to be.
It's expired? Cayenne asks from the living room.
No, sweetheart, it's sort of a best-by date. It's not really expired. That's all just legal stuff.
Turtle says, I'd like to do this the right way. If we're going to do it, we should do it right. What about veterinary ketamine?
Hell, Martin says, we will do it right. Ketamine, that shit is expensive. We don't want to accidentally euthanize the girl, and we don't need to put her entirely under when it's just her goddamn finger. If we had ice, we could just numb it with cold, but we don't have ice. The lidocaine is perfect. The lidocaine will be fine.
What's euthanize? Cayenne asks.
Kibble, let's have a towel to work on, a basin of water, and an irrigation syringe.
When Turtle has gathered the things, Martin looks over at her and says,
You know, we could really use a table right about now.
Turtle says nothing. Martin says,
Give me your hand, Cayenne.
Cayenne holds it to her chest.
No,
she says. Martin says,
Come on, sweetheart.
The girl shakes her head. Martin sighs and looks at Turtle. Turtle does not know what to do. The girl says,
I don't want to. You have to.
It'll heal on its own.
Some things, maybe, but not this. Give it here.
I promise it will, she says. I know it will.
Cayenne, he says.
I promise, 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 she says.
I'm warning you, girl.
Turtle thinks, I'm warning you, girl. She bites her lip. The phrase goes through her and fills her guts with pleasurable anguish.
Cayenne?
Martin says.
No, I won't, she says.
You can't do it. You can't. No, no, no.
I'm going to count to three, Martin says.
I won't do it, Cayenne says. She's crying. I'm afraid. I'm afraid, Marty.
One.
Her eyes are crumpled shut. Her face is red. She is sobbing, shaking her head.
You're scaring me, she says. You're scaring me.
Someday, Turtle will have to explain how she let this happen.
Two,
Martin says. Cayenne and Martin hesitate. Cayenne's look is terrified. She seems to not know herself what she will do. Martin is implacable. It is like neither of them wants to find out what happens when he gets to three.
Three,
Martin says, and Cayenne throws her hand forward. Martin grasps her by the wrist and sticks the hypodermic full of lidocaine into the webbing between index and middle fingers. Cayenne cries out, and Turtle sees his hand constrict painfully around the girl's wrist as he depresses the plunger. He withdraws the needle, sticks it into the other side of the knuckle, and depresses the plunger all the way.
There, he says. That wasn't so bad.
There are tears in Cayenne's eyes. She is gritting her teeth.
Toughen up, he says. Look at you. Not like kibble,
Martin says.
Not like kibble,
Cayenne says. She doesn't understand.
The devil took her soul,
Martin says,
and left her empty inside.
Shut up, Turtle says. You're confusing her.
I'm not confused, Cayenne says.
And now she looks at Turtle as if to see if she really is empty inside. Martin begins to cut away the gauze padding. Beneath, the fingertip is a ragged stump cut short right at the edge of the nail bed. The meat is pink and ringed with blackish-red scabbing. He begins washing it, and Cayenne murmurs and complains, trying to pull away, Martin pulling her hand back. When he is done washing it, he takes the hair tie out of Cayenne's hair and wraps it around the base of the finger for a tourniquet, turning loops of it around a pair of hemostatic forceps until the finger begins to drain white.
It hurts, Marty, she says.
This will cut into the bleeding. You want me to see what I'm doing, don't you? Well?
Marty, it hurts.
So, Martin says, how are things, Kibble?
Turtle examines his expression, unable to reply.
Couldn't get it together to pay the electricity bill, though, could you?
It's turned off at the main. There's a short somewhere.
Well, I'll get it fixed.
Cayenne's finger is waxy and drained of blood from the tourniquet.
Okay, he says. Hold her hand down.
Turtle pushes the girl's hand down onto a towel.
I'm scared, Cayenne says. You're scaring me.
Close your eyes and think of England, Martin says.
What?
Cayenne says, confounded.
What?
What is wrong with you? Turtle says, holding the girl's hand clamped to the floor by the wrist. Martin begins cutting away at the remains of the fingernail, and Cayenne opens her mouth and screams. The scream is unbearably high-pitched and goes on and on. Her body goes rigid, and she heaves against Turtle. And Turtle, for all that she is bigger, cannot hold her.
Shut up, Martin says. Kibble, shut her up! For Christ's sakes, Cayenne, shut the fuck up!
Cayenne stops and gasps for breath. Her hand is writhing. Turtle cannot keep it pinned in place.
You can't feel it, Martin says.
I can, Cayenne says. I can feel it.
She can't feel it, Martin says. Shut your fucking eyes. You can't feel it.
I can. I can feel it.
Listen, Martin says and stops. Listen, he says. I know you're scared, sweetheart. I know you are. And I know that this may look really, really bad. But we have to do this. Do you hear me?
The girl is looking up at him.
Do you hear me, Cayenne?
Yes.
We have to do this, and you're going to help. Because if we can't do this, we're going to have to drive you back to that gas station where I found you and give you back.
No,
Cayenne says.
Well then, you're going to need to be very brave, all right?
Cayenne closes her eyes tight. Her small face screws up in concentration. Her nose wrinkles.
He plunges the scalpel into the flesh and cuts from the right side of the finger, across the top, and down onto the left side. Cayenne struggles weakly. Turtle holds the girl's hand planted fast to the towel. Martin slips the scalpel beneath the flap of the skin. Because of the tourniquet, it bleeds only weakly, like the latex that weeps out of a broken milkweed.
"This," Martin says, levering the scalpel to expose a crescent of flat, pinkish tissue slicked with thin blood, "is the keratogenous membrane, Kibble. It's the germinal matrix that produces the nail."
He snips it away. Cayenne lashes frantically. "No, no, 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 no," she says. Her words are broken by ragged, sobbing gasps. Snot is running out of her nose. Hair is stuck to her face. Her eyes are squeezed shut. The girl's finger is so small that the movements involved are tiny, delicate. He slips the scalpel into the bloody yellow mess, working carefully around some submerged object.
"Easy, easy," Martin says. "Easy, girl."
"Stop! Stop! I can feel it!" Cayenne cries.
"Shut up!" "Maybe we should wait," Turtle says. "She's being hysterical. She can't feel shit."
"Even so," Turtle says, "maybe ketamine."
"Well, it's started now," Martin says.
He brings out a bone, shorn at one end, small as a bit of pencil lead. Cayenne's eyes are closed and veins stand out on her forehead. She's gasping quickly and shallowly. Turtle glimpses the joint of the next bone lower down. Martin peels the top half of the skin away to expose it.
"Clip that," he says.
"You're not serious," Turtle says. Cayenne is whimpering.
"Clip it," Martin says. "Clip that thing."
Turtle looks at the tiny, yellowish-white knob.
"Cut it, Kibble," Martin says.
"I can't," she says.
"Clip it," he says. "Don't look at her. I told you she can't feel shit."
Turtle picks up the diagonal pliers and opens the beveled jaws and closes them over the bone end. She lifts them away and drops the severed bit of bone on the towel. Then Turtle hears car tires coming up the gravel drive.
"Motherfucker, not now," Martin says. "Who the fuck is that?"
"I don't know," Turtle says. "How would I know?"
"Well, who's been coming over?"
"No one," Turtle lies.
"Don't fuck with me, Kibble. Who's been coming over?"
"Oh," he says.
"Oh, tell me it's that little boyfriend of yours. Oh, just let him come on in here. Just let him come on in here and see this, and he and I will have the kind of discussion he won't ever forget."
Turtle rises and walks toward the sliding glass door. She catches a glimpse of Jacob's forerunner coming up the drive. Martin is plucking up the flesh and snipping it back with scissors.
"Shit," she says.
She can hear his music roaring from the speakers. The Black Keys, Psychotic Girl. She hears him park outside and the squelch of the parking brake. She feels paralyzed. All she can think is, not like this. Not now, and not like this. She throws open the sliding glass door and steps out onto the porch and slams it closed behind her. Jacob is parked in the graveled lot beside Martin's truck. Martin and Cayenne are not visible from his angle, but if he walks up onto the porch, he'll see them. Jacob kills the engine and the music stops, and he walks around the front of the truck and leans against the hood. Turtle climbs down off the porch and out into the driveway. She feels hollow.
"So,"
he says. "So," she says.
"Missed you at registration today."
"What? Registration for high school? It's today. Everybody signs up for classes, and the teachers and the upperclassmen welcome freshmen to the school. We play icebreaker games. It's a holdover from our hippie roots. It's not exactly awesome, but I thought you'd be there. I'm guessing this is not a coincidence. He gestures to Martin's truck. She stares at him.
I'm not the only person who missed you, he says.
She stands in silence. He looks like a paper cutout of himself.
It's not gonna work, he says.
She has no idea what he's talking about. He spreads his arms as if to encompass the idiocy of something, as if to incite her to reasonableness.
Didn't you think how excited Caroline was to see you at registration? She was looking forward to it for weeks. She wants you and Brett to sign up for the same elective classes. She thinks you'd like woodshop. And now you're transferring to some school in Malta, Idaho.
Idaho? What the hell, Turtle?
Turtle walks toward him.
He is like a fragment of a life she had to leave behind a long time ago. His whole presence invested with strangeness and inadequacy.
I mean, Jacob says, come on. All of a sudden, it's like Brandon, Isabel, Caroline, they're like, where's Turtle? And I'm just like, I have no idea. What's...
He spreads his arms again.
What's going on?
Jacob, you can't come back here.
What?
Leave, Jacob. You have to leave and you can't come back. I have some things I need to take care of here. You can't help me and I don't want you to help. If you love me and if you trust me, you will leave.
He gestures, seems to have no idea how to answer her.
What? What are you talking about?
Jacob, she says.
What?
I want you to go.
That's not good enough.
He gestures again to Martin's truck.
I mean, are you really planning on going to Idaho? Are you really transferring there?
Is your dad moving you out there?
Or did your dad just transfer you there, hoping that the paperwork would get lost and no one would notice? Because that's just not gonna fly. And you know why it's not gonna fly? Because there are people who give a fuck, Turtle.
Jacob, I told you, there are things I need to take care of here.
I mean, what's the plan?
You're not listening to me.
Come on, Jacob says. This is stupid. I mean, just get in the truck with me and come get registered. Because we both know you're not leaving Mendocino.
Jacob, you need to go.
No.
Jacob, she says, listen to me.
No, Turtle. This is simple. I mean, this is stupid. Let's go and...
You spoiled fuck, she says.
She grabs his shirt and jerks him toward her. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but it's not simple. It's not at all simple. And you better fucking leave. Are you listening?
I don't want you pretending you know anything about it when you know nothing. I don't want you telling me what to do. Now get the fuck off my property.
She shoves him back against the truck and says, go back to your pathetic, bloodless little life. I'll be here living mine. And don't you ever tell me what to do. Not like that. Not ever again.
Okay, he says. Okay, I'm leaving. But if you think I'm never coming back...
She spits into the gravel between them. He slowly gets into the truck and starts the engine, watching her through the windshield. He turns the truck around and roars away down the drive. She stands for a moment longer.
You just keep giving things up. You just keep giving them up like that.
What you want, she thinks, is to have no choices.
But, she thinks, he's right. He's right about you, which is why you can never see him again.
He is right about Martin, and if you could ask him about Cayenne, he would know what to do.
Hell, she thinks. Right? You think he is right? He doesn't know anything about it.
I'm all Martin has, and I can't leave him alone with that. I can't.
She thinks, when your daddy sees clearly, then he wants everything for you. And when he doesn't, when he can't see that you are your own person, then he wants to bring you down with him.
How could Jacob know anything about that? How could Jacob be right about Martin? Martin has more hurt in him and more courage in him than Jacob could ever understand. They look at you, and they see what you need to do. Go, he'd say. Run. But they don't see it from where you stand. They don't see who you'd be leaving behind and what all of that meant to you. They can't. They only see it their way. And Jacob is only right in that he would say what anyone else would say, as if it weren't complicated. But he doesn't get it. Profoundly doesn't fucking get it. Will never get it. And that world, Turtle thinks, has not done so well by you that you owe it anything. Just because everybody believes something, just because everybody but you believes it, that doesn't make you wrong. Inside, Martin is crouching awkwardly over Cayenne's splayed hand and stitching the wound closed.
Christ, he says. Was that your little boyfriend? I'd relish the chance to meet him, you know.
Cayenne is leaning back against the wall, her mouth stuffed full of her shirt, her face clenched. One eye opens, rolls, and fastens on Turtle, the skin around the eye crumpled in pain. Shut up, she says. I know you've met him. She watches his face harden, thinking, if you ever hurt him, I will open you like a fucking fish and pull out your entrails in fucking handfuls, and I will fucking leave you that way. Martin is dragging the needle through the bloody, puckering edge of the wound. 22. Turtle lies in a cold bath and looks up at the boards of the ceiling. It has been a week since the amputation. School has started without her. She puts her hands on the bathtub's sides and raises herself up, walks to the sink and kneels there, going through the things beneath the sink until she comes back with a disposable razor. Her legs are near hairless, but she runs the razor up her shin, and then stops and looks at the blade, and she thinks, "What are you doing, Turtle? What are you doing?" And then she goes to the sink and picks up Martin's shaving cream and dispenses it into her hand and stands there, dripping water, lathering her pubic hair, and then gently parting it from her skin. When she is done, she walks to the toilet and sits down and throws the razor on the floor and puts her head in her hands. She comes out of the bath into the kitchen. Martin has torn open the wall and exposed old newspaper insulation, blackened wiring. He is sitting on an overturned 5-gallon bucket, tearing out the boards along the floor with a cat's paw, smoking a cigar. Long ropes of rat-eaten wiring lie on the floor with an ohm meter. A pair of kitchen tongs leans up against his bucket. The back door is propped open with a skill saw. Turtle, in 501s and a t-shirt, stands toweling her hair. In the living room, Cayenne has the belt sander turned face up and is sharpening sticks on it for some purpose all her own. She works with one hand, holding the other, wounded hand close to herself. She seems utterly absorbed. What the hell she's doing, Turtle doesn't know.
Oh, kibble,
Martin says. I'm going to be having the guys over for a game of poker. I think it's better if they don't hang out with Cayenne. I think you should take Grandpa's truck, go into town, show her around Mendocino for a couple of hours. Come back around 11 when the guys are gone.
She hates me, Turtle says. She doesn't hate you, Martin says.
Picking up the kitchen tongs, he reaches into the wall and draws out a dead rat and wings it out the open door into the gulch. She hates me, and she's right to hate me.
She'll come around.
Turtle looks at Cayenne, who cannot hear them over the sander. The girl should be wearing earplugs.
More boards have been torn out in the living room. They are stacked on the floor near Cayenne with the heaps of hacked-out newspaper insulation blackened and charred from the short. Martin has been furniture shopping. A new bed in the bedroom and a new table in the living room, covered now in spools of wire and beer bottles and cigars and old plates. There is a stack of bills and the letter from the district. Martin has not bothered to answer it. Turtle is sure that someone will follow up on her absence from school. Martin has done nothing. He does not seem to care. She looks back at him. She hates him with such intensity it is hard to look at him. He is bent forward into the wall, wrenching the wiring up from where it is tacked to the studs. Turtle spends the day shooting skeet on the porch. In the evening, she walks up through the orchard with Grandpa's keys, the Remington 870, and a jump starter. She comes to where the ashen remains of the trailer are succumbing to the raspberry brambles. She unlocks the truck and sits on the old vinyl bench seat, looking at the burned black trailer through the cracked windshield. In the drink holder, there's a big gulp cup full of sunflower seeds, and in the other, a bottle of Tabasco. She is overcome for a moment, thinking of Grandpa, of the cribbage games, of how he used to put Tabasco on his pizza. She wraps and re-wraps her hands on the steering wheel, tries the ignition. The engine turns over and over without starting, and then it catches, and she throws the truck into reverse, turns around in the grassy field, and drives back to the house, not looking back, touching her jaw with two fingers as if it were sore. She knows how to drive, but she has never driven without Martin there in the cab with her, and she just eases along. She parks Grandpa's truck beside Daddy's and, leaving it running, goes into the unlit house. Cayenne is reading in front of the fire. She stirs the girl with her foot. "Come on," she says. Cayenne does not look up. Her pointer finger is tightly wrapped in gauze and buddy taped to her middle finger to keep her from using it. She lies on her stomach, intent on her book. She swings her feet through the air, ignoring Turtle. Turtle touches the girl's bare shoulder with the toe of her boot. The girl looks up, her face stiff and sullen. "You're coming with me." "What?" Cayenne says. This is how she always replies. Turtle can look right at the girl and say something, and the girl will look back and say, "What?" "For fuck's sake, get up." The girl dog-ears her page, heaves herself up. She does everything one-handed. "What are you reading?" "What?" "It's a different book, right?" The girl closes it, looks at the cover. "Did he buy you that book?" "So?" "Come on," Turtle says, and grabs the girl by the upper arm, the girl coming along more like a puppet than a child, and she pushes her into the passenger seat of the truck. Turtle gets in on the driver's side. "Where are we going?" "I don't know," Turtle says, "but we can't stay here." She wants to take the girl by the hair and dash her into the window for hating her. She wants to reach into that cunt's small mind and crush that hate out like crushing out a candle wick. And she thinks, "You cannot hate me. You cannot think the things you think about me." "All right," the girl says it sullenly, as if she did not really consent. Says it with a bitter, hateful, passive-aggressive resignation, the way her mom or her aunt or someone said it in the face of each new circumstance. "Hey," Turtle says. "Hey, don't you be a little cunt with me." The girl sits, looking down at her book. "You have somewhere you want to go?" Cayenne shakes her head. "That's what I thought," Turtle says. Turtle shifts the truck into gear and pulls back onto the road. She turns north onto the coast highway with no clear idea of where they are going. Jacob has not been to see her in the last week. To keep herself from going north, toward Jacobs, she turns east onto the Comanche Ukiah Road by the Stanford Inn and the Ravens Restaurant. On their left, the slopes cut away to Big River. The light comes purple-green through the trees. Turtle still has no clear idea of where she is taking them. The girl is silent beside her in the cab. They come to a set of warning signs posted by the road, and then a long section of road where the left-hand lane has sheared away. They can see strewn plates of blacktop among the trees below. The road becomes a single lane that Turtle threads slowly, both of them looking at the ragged edge of blacktop. Then, through the town of Comanche, a handful of houses fronting the road, a redwood schoolhouse with a couple of basketball hoops, a general store, and the junction with Flynn Creek Road. Turtle keeps them on the Comanche Road, and they climb into the hills, winding past ranches, into narrower and more difficult roads. She drives slowly. The only way she knows to think about this problem is to imagine she is reaching out to herself some years ago. It is a bad idea, but she can turn up nothing else in her mind. They turn off onto a deeply rutted track of orange clay covered in oak leaves. They follow it for a quarter of a mile until they come to a yellow Forest Service gate, where Turtle parks. She gets out, stops. She pockets Grandpa's Tabasco, checks the shotgun's magazine, and slings it. Then she walks around to the girl's door, opens it, says, "Come on, we walk from here." Cayenne stares at her. "Come on," Turtle says. The girl does not move. She makes no expression. "Christ," Turtle says. "Jesus Christ." She walks away, leaving the door open and the headlights on. After a moment, the girl hops out of the cab and follows. Turtle turns, waits, and they continue together. Dead branches are strewn across the road. Saplings grow in the median. They come to a wide pullout where heaps of scrap lumber and stacks of tar paper shingles stand rotting underneath towering redwoods. And they can see down a boggy slope above a creek. A single cottage in the clearing, the eaves hung with lichen, the shingles chinked with moss and scattered by ravens, leaving bare spots of patchy tar paper. Jacob and Brett showed her this place, some building project abandoned by its owners. "Julia," Cayenne says, "what are we doing? Come on." Turtle walks over to a heap of lumber. Old clapboard siding of some kind, covered now in redwood needles. She squats down, slips her fingertips beneath a board, and lifts it aside. The board beneath is covered in rotting duff, marked with the paths of some crawling creature. Centipedes go snaking for cover. Cayenne comes over, stares down with sullen, stifled interest. Turtle lifts aside the next board, and this one, too, is empty, except for a single copper-gold California slender salamander, 4 inches long. Its skin as supple and moist as the flesh of an eye, with tiny, almost vestigial legs. Turtle indicates the slender salamander, and Cayenne purses her lips. Turtle lifts this board aside, sets it carefully down. There are dirt and leaves crushed between these boards, and creeping white roots. And Turtle is about to lift this board up when she sees the scorpion. Big, with yellow jointed legs, her body like a scab blackened with age, holding the same depth of color. On her back, heaped scorplings, each as white and moist as ant eggs. With the small black dots for lateral eyes and the small single black dots for median eyes. Turtle picks the creature up by the barbed tail. She draws her knife and straight razors it down the scorpion's back, shaving the scorplings into the leaf litter.
They salt the board, crawling in every direction, bright white against the duff. The scorpion lashes and twists under her knife, arching her back and reaching desperately with her claws, her ochre mouthpieces flaring and closing. Kyan gasps. Careful, she says. Turtle holds the scorpion up to the headlights, and the light shines through the coil of her guts. Kyan draws closer. The scorpion strains, reaching through the air, curling and falling back to her full length. Turtle lowers the lashing scorpion into her mouth and tears off the tail and discards it among the scattered, swarming scorplings. She chews, passing the lashing arachnid from one line of molars to the other, the integument crackling apart. Turtle swallows.
Oh my god, Kyan says.
You want to try?
Oh my god, Kyan says again.
Come on.
No!
Give it a try.
No,
Kyan says.
You sure?
I don't know. Don't be a pussy, Turtle says.
Okay, okay, Kyan says. Maybe.
The next scorpion is larger, his armor a pitted rust color. He turns in confusion from right to left, and then arches his body, displaying claws and tail. The bulb is pus yellow, and the stinger itself is a thin black hook, where plates of his rust color armor abut. The integument is textured with chitinous warts. Turtle takes the Tabasco from her back pocket, shakes a dash out onto the scorpion, which flinches. She says,
"You like hot sauce?"
"This is gross," Kyan says, knocking her knees together, touching her fingertips together.
"Yeah?"
Turtle says.
"I can't believe we're doing this,"
Kyan says. But she says it excitedly, almost urgently.
"Puts hair on your ovaries," Turtle says.
Kyan gives a startled, nervous laugh. Then she says,
"I like hot sauce."
"All right," Turtle says. She dashes more Tabasco onto the scorpion, which swings its claws, opening and closing them, and moves to strike with its tail. The Tabasco is very bright in the headlights.
"You want to pick it up, or should I?"
"You do it." Turtle catches the scorpion by the tail and swings it lashing into the air. It claws at her, dripping Tabasco, jointed, cricket yellow legs spidering in the air, descending one after another in some reflexive movement of walking. He throws off flecks of Tabasco with his urgent twitchings. Turtle holds it out. Kyan says,
"Oh, God."
Turtle says,
"You got this."
"Oh, God." She dances away nervously and excitedly, comes back.
"Do it,"
Turtle says. The scorpion strains his claws up, trying to curl back on himself and reach Turtle's fingers. His eyes are small black points set in his rusty red armature. Their gloss catches the headlights.
"I can't,"
Kyan says, hopping up and down. The scorpion strains for Turtle and then drops to full extension, dripping, the red droplets running from his claws. Kyan opens her mouth, comes up from underneath the scorpion, and closes her mouth on it.
"Bite the tail," Turtle says.
"Bite the thing off." Kyan gnashes her teeth, and the tail peels away in Turtle's fingers, and Turtle flicks it into the duff. Kyan hesitates, mouth locked close.
"Chew," Turtle says. "Chew."
Kyan's eyes bulge. She chews hard and then swallows. Turtle claps her on the shoulder. The girl puts her hands on her knees, gasping and distraught.
"You okay?"
Turtle says.
"Christ,"
she says, grasping at her heart with the fingertips of her unwounded hand.
"I'm so nervous, my heart hurts. It does."
Turtle laughs, and then Kyan laughs too.
"That was so gross."
Nah, it was fine.
"Let's bring one back for Martin."
All right, Turtle says. They lift aside boards until they find another scorpion. And this one, Turtle carries back to the truck and drops into the big gulp cup. They drive back in the dark, the road now deserted, the headlights cutting across the forest. Cayenne sucks on her thumb. They pull onto Highway 1 and turn north. Buckhorn Hill is south. They are going toward town. Where are we going? I need to pick something up, Turtle says. Okay, Cayenne says. Just something I thought of. What? Cayenne says. It's nothing, Turtle says. Julia, have you ever been stung?
No.
Never?
Never.
Oh. They drive in silence. Julia?
Yes.
Nothing.
What?
I've been bitten before, though.
Yeah?
Yeah. There are these bugs that bite you and lay eggs in your skin. Then, all the little bugs hatch under your skin.
Really?
Turtle has never heard of such a thing. Yeah, and I had a big bite, and so what my stepdad, really my mom's boyfriend, I guess, but kind of my stepdad, what he did is he had, like, a beer bottle, and he heated it up on the stove with, you know, he heated it up until it was, like, really hot, and the air inside of it was really hot. And then he put it on my arm, and it sucked onto my arm. And when it cooled, it, like, suctioned out all the spider eggs, like a vacuum. Like, they were all white and stringy. He sucked them all out, and it was okay after that.
Christ.
What?
Just Christ, I guess.
Have you ever had that happen, Julia?
No.
Really?
I've never even heard of that.
It happens all the time. You don't have that here?
All the time?
Yeah. That people get, like, the bugs in their skin?
Yeah.
Would that even work?
Turtle is having trouble imagining the bottle trick.
Yeah, it works. You've never had those bugs?
No.
They're, you know...
The girl scratches at her arm.
You know, under your skin.
No, Turtle says. I didn't even know that was possible.
Oh, yeah. And, like, the people at the hospital, they don't even believe you.
You went to the hospital?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All the time. Like, if you can't pay for a doctor, you can just go to the ER. They have to take you. It's the law. That's what my stepdad says. But you go in, and the doctor won't even look at it. They just pretend like it's not happening. They won't CT scan it or anything.
Huh.
They drive through Mendocino and up into Fort Bragg, where Turtle pulls off the highway and into the parking lot of the Rite Aid. She leaves Cayenne in the car and walks through the sliding doors. There are no other customers in the store. The lights are bleakly bright, and there is a single checker at the counter. Turtle walks to the back, to the closed pharmacy. She walks along the aisles until she finds the pregnancy tests. She kneels down in front of these, picks up a pink box, and walks quickly back to the front, where she pays with cash, peeling the bills off with shaking hands. The checker is an old woman with reddish, curled hair, and she does not look at Turtle, but says, "You all right, honey?" Turtle picks up the box and stuffs it into her pocket. She says, "Yeah, I'm fine." The checker says, "Honey, you sure? You need anything?" Turtle is about to turn and walk away, and the woman says, "You got somewhere to stay for tonight?" Turtle turns back. She says, "I'm fine. Yeah, I've got somewhere to stay." The woman keeps looking down, not directly at Turtle. She says, "All right, sweetheart, be safe. Have a nice night." Turtle turns and walks out to the truck. When she gets in the truck, Cayenne says, "What was that?"
"Nothing."
"What did you buy?"
"I didn't buy anything."
Oh. Cayenne?